All right. Well, welcome everyone. I think this is the fourth talk about what's going on in 2020, the love explosion, as I've called it. And I'm going to start with a little passage just to ground us and maybe bring us into a slightly altered state as we go through our next hour and a half together, or for however long you want to stick around. And this is a paragraph out of I Am That. This is by Sri Nisargadatta, and it's what I randomly opened to earlier today. Contemplate life as infinite, undivided, ever-present, ever-active, until you realize yourself as one with it. It is not even very difficult, for you will be returning only to your own natural condition. Once you realize that all comes from within, that the world in which you live has not been projected onto you, but by you, your fear comes to an end. Without this realization, you identify yourself with the externals, like the body, mind, society, nation, humanity, even God or the absolute. But these are all escapes from fear. It is only when you fully accept your responsibility from the little world in which you live and watch the process of its creation, preservation, and destruction, that you may be free from your imaginary bondage. Okay, it bears repeating, right? It is only when you fully accept your responsibility for the little world in which you live and watch the process of its creation, preservation, and destruction, that you may be free from your imaginary bondage. And I love that this is the paragraph that jumped out at me, because here we are in our little worlds in quarantine. It's been over a month now, maybe almost a month and a half. And we are in this, in our little worlds with our imaginary bondage, and we're getting to course correct. There's millions of people all over the world who are changing the course of their lives. And as we're in this moment, as we're sitting sort of on the precipice about to come out of this, whether it's time for it, whether we're ready, whether it's even the right thing to do, we are moving in the direction of moving out of quarantine. And I want to be really present with the moment of transition and how we transition, because it's like a fast. If you've ever fasted, you know that the most difficult time in the fast is when you start eating again. And as we start moving out into the world with masks, with gloves, with different hairstyles and different clothing and different way of greeting each other, being with this moment as we're in just in however long this is, whether it's weeks or even months, but I don't think it's months. I think it's, you know, less than weeks. As we sit in this moment before we re-engage, and to get the chance at this time to really consider what has changed, what do you want to change, sitting with the potential for what's possible now as we move forward. So let's just check out our solar system. All right, here we are. This is actually what the planets look like they're doing right now. And if we line up the sun and the earth, and we move a little bit farther out, we can see that this Venus planet is getting close to Earth. It's going to move right in between the Earth and the Sun. And as it does this, it appears to go retrograde, and it appears to be changing. And when it's exactly in alignment, which will be at the end of May, the first week of June, we call that combust. And when Venus and the Earth are combust, and that will be around May 28th till about June 8th.
I don't know.
It's a really potent shifting point. So regardless of whatever the governor,
someone needs to put their
time period, that time period between May 28th and June 9th is kind of a critical moment in the transition. So I'm already going on to Venus retrograde. Let's see if there's just anything else that's interesting out here. Further out, we can see that Jupiter and Saturn in this alignment. Jupiter and Saturn is moving away. Let's just go farther out, and we can see Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto in this alignment. And then let's go farther out and farther out. And let's just remember that we are on a tiny planet in a solar system, and here are all the stars, and we're part of a galaxy. That is a plane of stars and galaxies, and then let's go back home. Here's Sirius, a very bright star that's close to us. We'll be exploring that as we look at the eclipse on July 4th. And as we go farther in, let's find the sun again.
I don't need to see it. I know it.
All right, back home. Here's home. The Earth spinning around. All right. I'm going to just put that down.
Rebecca's right. Not everyone is muted. I can hear people breathing. Are you muted?
Rosie, can you ask everyone to
mute? And let's come to astrology.
Can you ask everyone to mute?
So we'll look at Joe Biden's chart today. We'll look at his VP picks. I'll tell you whose birthday is the same exact day as me.
Any of us talking to her? Can somebody call her?
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. So my son just told me not everyone's muted. So he is helping me, and I will. Okay. There. Thanks, Finn. Okay. Yeah, I can't hear anything with my microphone, so I appreciate that. All right, so here's Venus retrograde, May 12th. It's coming up. We can see that when it happens, all the planets are on one side of the nodes, and this is, you know, based on it being night. So just the fact that they're all below the horizon just has to do with it being night here, but it's day somewhere else, so that doesn't really matter. And I want to consider that during this time period, as we move into the Venus retrograde, we move into a very sacred time where, as human beings on this planet, we can really directly connect with other places. And we really have an extraordinary opportunity to come into a more connected state. And this is what I've been talking about, as over the past months, we've been getting ready. In January, we had the eclipses that were connected to Saturn and Pluto and that conjunction, and it was spreading something that really needed to transform in the world. And now as we move towards this time period of Jupiter conjunct Pluto, it's spreading, it's expanding. But remember that it's the transformation that is spreading. The virus is just a physical manifestation, one tiny physical manifestation of something larger that is spreading. And the thing that larger that's spreading is a complete transformation of the pyramid schemes, the power schemes that are on this planet that are hitting their kind of peak. So when we think about a pyramid, we think it's got a square at the bottom and then it's got four triangles. So it's combining the relationship of the square, which is about manifestation, power. It has to do with conflict. The ability to bring things into form requires some degree of conflict. It requires an ability to change, to transform, and that's what the square represents, and the triangles represent stability. So when we think about a pyramid, we've got the baseline of it, and then we've got the four triangles that are pointing to a top. And this pyramid has been used for to describe our economy, to describe our governments. It's in practically every organization on the planet right now that we worship this pyramid, but it is starting to break apart because the bottom layer has started to fall off. And as we see this shift that's happening with the virus, we're seeing even more of the bottom layer falling off. We're seeing even more of the people who are most vulnerable, who are really at the bottom of the pyramid, the hardest workers, the people who are dealing with the most poverty, they're being affected by it, and it's part of the whole bottom falling off. But the thing is that we're moving into a whole different paradigm. It's much bigger than what we can imagine. And the more we can presence it during this time, the better equipped we will be for the next 5-6 years. Because this isn't just something that's going to happen just right away this year. This is something that has a few stages to it. So as we sit with the presence of right now and we get to make some very personal shifts in our lives right now so that we can be prepared for the changes for next year, which will be starting the revolution, starting this reformation. And that leads into kind of the massive turnover of our systems that is really between 2026 and 2031. I just want to keep coming back to this moment. So coming back to this moment in our small worlds, our little worlds, where we're realizing that we have been projecting our power onto leaders for a very long time, thousands of years. And we keep thinking that they're in control, that they're in power, that there's these powerful families that control our economic systems. There's so many conspiracies and understandings about the power structures that lead to these conspiracies probably being true. But here we are recognizing that the power dynamics at the top are falling apart because the bottom is falling off. And the thing is, if we can start to really visualize in our immediate organizations, in the places where we have most of a voice, where our voice matters, where we can speak into the reality of our current situations in a way that transforms them, we could start working with the octahedron. We can start working with an eight-sided figure. We can start realizing that there's a bottom, a whole bottom pyramid. And that bottom pyramid is a truer platonic solid. It's a truer solid. It has a sphere that encapsulates it. And the nodal points are where the corners of the geometric configuration touches the sphere. And these nodal points have tremendous potency. So as we visualize the point that's just absent, the one that's at the bottom, that as we recognize that there is a rectification process, that this overvaluing growth and expansion has to be met with valuing coming into a body, coming down, coming grounded, that value of contraction. That's what Saturn's about. Saturn's about contraction. Saturn's about we have actual limitations in our bodies, and we have actual limitations in this world, and these actual limitations are only here by design for us to use for our spiritual growth, for our deepening into awareness. And I don't even want to use the word spiritual growth anymore. I want to use, because even using the word growth continually is continually valuing something that is changing, regardless of whether we like it changing or not. So I want to say, this increased spiritual presencing, this increased ability to be truly aware of our interconnection with each other, our interconnection with the planet, and our interconnection with our planet's solar system, with the solar system's connection to other stars, with other stars' connection to other galaxies, that all of this is, we're part of something so much bigger. And if we stay really focused on the political scenes of right now, if we stay really focused on projecting our power onto leaders, then we miss a bit of the opportunity of right now, which Venus is offering. It's offering us an ability to really move into love. And this experience of love, this isn't romantic love. This isn't falling in love with your ideal partner. That's not this kind of love. This kind of love is recognizing that everyone around us has the ability to love us, regardless of who they are, whether the stranger or the person at the demonstration that we're projecting they're hating us, or whether it's our parents or people that have normally projected difficult things onto us. Recognizing that within each of us, there is this ability to love. And that is what Venus is bringing in, because as Venus is stationing and it's already in its position where it's going to hang out, it is in the sign of Gemini, which is bringing in the polarity, but also uniting the polarity. So Gemini's purpose, its role, its work is to unite the twins. It's to bring the twins together. And Venus, as the planet of, as that is the esoteric ruler of Gemini, unites these twins, brings them together. And it is stationing right here. Here's Venus in Gemini. It looks like the Roman numeral 2, that's Gemini, and here's Venus. And as it's stationing, it's close to the North Node, which is where we'll have an eclipse on June 5th. And on this eclipse, if you like looking at charts, here's the chart. Here's the sun at 15 degrees Gemini. Here's the moon at 15 degrees Sagittarius. Here's Venus at 12 Gemini. Very close, 3 degrees to the sun. And here's the North Node at 29 degrees Gemini. The nodes move backwards. They stay in a sign for about a year and a half. So the nodes are about to transition out of Gemini Sagittarius, and they're in the process of already transitioning. They've just moved out of Cancer, Capricorn, and now they are just moving into Gemini Sagittarius. So the nodes are just shifting signs, and they'll be moving more and more into Gemini and more into Sagittarius. And this eclipse is when Venus is within 10 degrees of the sun, which means it's combust. And as I just took a class with Dennis Flaherty, and he was talking about Sun-Venus combust as being a time of austerity. Now it's about a 10-day window. And we want to plan a little bit for this time period as we trip out in non-linear time and then come back to linear time. So looking at our calendars and going, what am I doing May 28th to June 8th? And can I practice austerity? Because in a way, this whole time period is about austerity for us. Whatever it is that we can't go to, a lot of things that we used to go to, we're living simpler, and we're learning a lot about how to do that. So that's beautiful. That's Venus in austerity. It's interesting that that time period happens right as probably there'll be a release of the quarantine. I would encourage us to practice for that time period in particular stronger austerity measures. So if you can, really pay attention to that time period and go out as little as possible, maybe even eat more simply, don't buy things that time period unless you need to. Just take, you know, it's just another 10-day window of time, but it can really help us presence as we move off of this fast and be as conscious as we can be as we re-engage. So that we're re-engaging with kindness. We're really re-engaging with a different sense of connection with the people around us. I think this thing about wearing masks is really interesting, that the mask is kind of a symbol of compassion. It's a symbol of loving other people, regardless of whether you believe or don't believe about the virus, or I hear all kinds of things. Yes, the time period is May 28th to June 8th. But regardless of whatever you believe, the mask has become the symbol of, I recognize that you may need something from me. You may, you matter to me, regardless of how much it impacts anything. It's a symbol and it's a gesture. And this very visible gesture of literally covering our mouths as we move into more silence as we reengage and more compassion. The eyes are the windows to the soul. So we're using our eyes. I mean, this is a tremendous opportunity for us to engage really differently with each other. I've heard if you look someone in the eyes for a full 3 minutes, you will fall in love with them. That it just takes 3 minutes of complete solid eye contact with someone. And I've done that in retreats and found that it works pretty amazing. So as we re-engage with our eyes, stop distracting ourselves with so much chatter. That's the whole thing about Gemini. Gemini's chatter, right? Gemini is, what's going on out here? How can we talk about this? What do we have to say to each other? Blah, 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 blah. And we just keep chatting. But for every sign, there's a spiritual transformation. And the spiritual transformation of Gemini is uniting and coming into unity, moving from the mouth to the eyes, moving from one kind of expression into a different kind of expression. And Venus is the esoteric ruler of Gemini. And as she stations there, she brings out the best in Gemini. She brings out the best in her ability to communicate with love. And she's actually transforming our communication, how we communicate with each other, so that we can move into a different quality of communication. And here we are doing all this electronic stuff. And yet we're recreating inside of ourselves a different way of communicating with each other. So let's go to the solar eclipse. The solar eclipse is June 20th, 2020. It'll be the 21st for those of you on the East Coast. And it is at exactly 0 degrees Cancer. So after we have the eclipse at the end of May, beginning of June, June 5th, we have that eclipse, then we have this eclipse. Now this is a total solar eclipse. We can see that the nodes are very close to the sun and the moon at 0 Cancer. And that, so it's not gonna be visible out here in the United States, but it will be visible on the other side of the world, in the Middle East and China, India. They'll be able to see it over there. And this is at a very auspicious moment. It's the summer solstice. And the summer solstice is really presencing the longest day or the longest night, depending on which hemisphere you live on. And it's presencing the polar shifts. It's presencing our shift as we, as our Earth, we're recognizing that our Earth is on a tilt. Basically, we're getting that we're tilted. And this tilt and this polarity of our, this change in our poles is changing. And when we get to the solstices, either winter or summer, we have a really potent shift that's happening. And this year, it's even stronger because of its alignment with an eclipse. So, summer solstice, eclipse, and we're moving into more election dynamics at that time period. And I imagine there'll be a lot of shifting this summer. It's just going to keep continually changing. We're moving into a very rapid state of change. And I don't think we're going to really feel like we're calming down until about 2032. So we've got 10 years to continue this profound level of transformation. Let's jump around here. Let's just look at Biden's chart. Okay, what's he doing? You can see that this guy's got Sun, Venus in Scorpio conjunct. This is, so he was born in a Sun, Venus combust. He was born with sometimes Sun, Venus, when it's so close, there can be a lot of ability to attract things to you, but it's all here in the 12th house. So he's behind the scenes. Whoever is propping him up, the organization that's propping him up is the one that's more in control or more even visibly in power. Here's Chiron, North Node, right at the top of his chart. He's got Saturn down here in the second house, which is not very strong, but he's in a strong period of time in his Vedic chart. He's in his Jupiter time period. And that means that he can be elevated. He can be supported. He's got a strong Jupiter, and that's continuing throughout the election time period. He's in his Jupiter time period, so he can be seen as a leader. And he's got Venus retrograde in his seventh house connected to his Saturn. So he's going to get support through his alliances. So who he picks as a VP is an important decision, particularly because when he moves into the Saturn time period, which will be, forget the date, let's look. September 2022, so about a year and a half into, if he wins, he moves into a Saturn time period, and that is a weak time period for him. He'll really feel like he's ready to be done with public life at that time period. So I think his VP is an important decision, and I think as we get closer to that time period when he's making that decision, it will be very interesting to see who he chooses. So I know that Amy Klobuchar has, she was born at a new moon, Sun. I don't have her birth time, so her moon could be dark moon, it could be new moon, but it's close, it's probably in Gemini. So the Venus retrograde is doing nice things for her. It's supporting her Sun, it's supporting her moon. So there can be good elevation for her. She just got through her Saturn return. She's not being adversely affected by the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. The Mars retrograde will be stationing close to her Mars, which will be supportive for her. She has a very good chart for being elevated at this time. But the person who was born on my birthday is Catherine Marie Cortez. So I saw that she was born on my birthday. I started researching her, and then I started seeing that she's kind of being explored as a pick for VP. And she was probably born maybe about 12 hours after me. So we have kind of different charts, but we're both moving into good time periods. She's probably already in her really good time period. And she does have some of these really cool yogas that I have in my chart, where she's got a Mars-Jupiter combination, and that elevates her Mercury, and she's got a strong Venus. So we'll see. She's a good person to be watching out for, but of course, I'm totally biased. I looked at Tammy Duckworth's chart. I didn't see really strong connections for her. Didn't mean to stop that. technology. Thanks. Oh, bear with me, please. Let me get this back. There we go. Thanks. Okay, so here's her Western chart. Again, I'm not sure how accurate her birth time is. Somebody on the web had her time at 6 p.m. Her career's growing. She's got lots of time for Saturn to keep rising, if this is true. All right. Let's look at Donald, just because we're in this political sphere. And for this, I want to put this time period in parentheses because we're projecting power onto these people. But the thing is that I feel like as leaders that they are saying they're willingly putting themselves in positions to be projected upon. And they're not actually holding the power. We're just looking at where we're projecting power. And Donald Trump has a very powerful, interesting chart for the next 5 months, because he was born in an eclipse, a total lunar eclipse, and the sun, 22 degrees Gemini, north node at 20 degrees Gemini, moon at 21 Sag, south node 20 degrees Sagittarius, and this is exactly where Venus is stationing on May 12th. And as Venus stations here, it opens him up to an awakening. And really, regardless of who he is personally and what his consciousness state is, it's all about what we're projecting onto him. And he's a pretty good adaptable person in terms of changing how what he believes and thinks and says based on the projections on him. So his mutableness, and this is a lot of mutable energy here, can work for us in this time period, particularly as we're really opening to love. And just to remind you of all the people whose birthdays are very close to his, Pence, his birthday is June 7th, so he was born a week before, so his sun is about 15 degrees Gemini. Xi Jinping was born on June 15th, so his sun is at around 22-23 degrees Gemini. Alex Azar, June 17th. So his is just a couple of degrees past Donald Trump's in Gemini. Boris Johnson is June 19th. So he's like around 27 degrees Gemini, 28. The governor of North Carolina. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in North Carolina during this time period. And then we have a bunch of people whose suns are opposite. They're around 21 degrees Sagittarius, so they're in the polar place of that. And people down there are Pope Francis. His birthday is December 17th, so that's almost exactly opposite June 17th. Emmanuel Macron is December 21st, Mnuchin is December 21st, Fauci is December 24th, Trudeau is December 25th, Christine Lagarde, who's the head of the IMF right now, is the first, Greta Thunberg is the third, and then there's a bunch of governors, Governor of Maine, Nevada, Oklahoma. They all have their, and Connecticut all have their sons there. And let's go to the United States chart. And let's move out of the personal projections. So basically all of these people are going to have a massive transition this May, June time period. And we get the chance to move into increased sacredness. And as Earth moves into increased sacredness, because Venus is a sacred planet, the Earth is a non-sacred planet in the process of becoming sacred. As we move into this increased sacredness, the top of the pyramid starts to crumble. It starts to fall apart. As the bottom falls off, the top falls off, and we get to reconfigure into a different, we get to change the way we see what actual reality is. So I know a lot of people are pretty scared right now, scared about money, scared about how they're gonna live, how they're gonna survive. And for those people, I think it's important for those of us who aren't afraid because our circumstances are such to continue to hold the vision, to continue to support local businesses, support the people who need this support the homeless, support, like continue through our financial abundance, through our the wealth of calmness we might be feeling, the wealth of our ability to presence, so that we can keep visualizing a completely different world structure. We can start visualizing universal healthcare. We can just see that as, of course, obviously. We can start visualizing everyone getting $2,000 a month just permanently, just absolute like support for that bottom of the pyramid, which isn't really the bottom of the pyramid. It's just the middle of an octahedron. It's the middle. And we may even want to be working with higher levels of sacred geometry, icosahedrons and dodecahedrons, so that we can work into more circular, more spherical realms of working together. So here's the US chart. Mars. Let's talk about Mars. Mars at 21 degrees Gemini. That means that Venus is going to station on Mars, and it's going to give Venus a chance to pull this Mars into a higher state of consciousness. Now, Mars represents war and activity and anything we need to explode in order to get moving. It's heat, it's inflammation. We have a Mars retrograde at the end of this year. And so we're going to see a hot, particularly hot August, September, because this sense of our relationship to Mars is heating up and strengthening. And particularly in the United States, as Venus stations on this Mars, we get to presence the karma of war. So working with the Civil War in particular, because that was the war that happened at the beginning of the cycle that we're in. And I'll talk about that cycle in a minute. But we're presencing all the wars, World War II, World War I, all of, and the Revolutionary War, all of these, all this place where war has taken place. And Mars is at this 21 degrees Gemini. And if you remember from some of the prior talks, that 21 degrees Gemini is aligned with Orion's belt. So Yay, now we get to go back out into the stars. We're leaving behind the projection of power onto these leaders, and we can see that they're holding the projection, right? They're all of those people, the head of China, the head of our Health and Human Services for the United States, the head of our country, both the VP and the head, they're all holding this projection. And they're all holding the projection for the United States of Mars, right? They're all. And so we've been acting out. I mean, if you can think about how much some vitriol comes out sometimes of the mouths of some of these people, that's they're aligning with Mars. And as a And I participate in the United States. A lot of you participate in the United States. We pay taxes. We follow the rules. We acknowledge that we go vote. So we're actively participating in the projection of the country. And as we do that, we tune into the karma of the country. We tune into this chart in particular, and this Mars at 21 degrees Gemini. And as Venus stations there, we get to change what this karma is. We get to rewrite what Mars is. And as Venus stations on Mars, then we have eclipses. We have an eclipse on our quote unquote birth date, July 4th, so that the sun will be back on itself on July 4th, which happens every year. And so we'll have an eclipse conjunct Venus, of the United States, which will be the one on June 20th, 21st. And so all of these points, we've got an eclipse on Mars, an eclipse on Venus, and an eclipse on the sun. And this is all giving us a change to rewrite what we want our country to be. Now, I talked about last time about regionalism, moving into smaller regions, looking to governors for more leadership. I mean, that's just kind of naturally happening. This can be a very radical shift. So as Venus presences Mars, and then we move into the fall, and we move into this time period, September 9th, 9-9, very close to kind of another holiday that has started up, not really holiday, not holly, but 9/11. So right around 9/11, we've got Mars stationing. Mars will be stationing at 28 degrees Aries, which is its own sign. And it will be moving back when it stations. Mars will go retrograde for 2 months, about 80 days, and it will go direct at the middle of November on the 19th. So Mars retrograde is going to hold the election here. It's also going to have a lot to do with what's going on when we move into fall and if the virus picks up again, because it seems to be sensitive to colder temperatures. We'll see. It could be something radically different. When Mars stations at 15 degrees Aries on November 13th, 2020. I think it's really hard to say what this is going to look like. When Mars stations here, it's opposite Venus. Venus is in Libra. It's in a nice placement. We're activating this opening, this love energy again. And as Mars stations, it moves forward. So it moves forward through November, December. It looks to me like we really feel like we're moving forward into a new world at that time period. So this year we're being held Venus retrograde, May 12th to June 26th. That's the entire Venus retrograde. But it's got its pre-shadow, which is now, and its post-shadow, which is June 26th until the end of July. And Mars is goes into its pre-shadow time period in July, goes retrograde in September, is retrograde until November 13th and then goes direct and is in its post-shadow time period until the end of the year, when at the end of the year, we'll see Jupiter and Saturn conjunct. These two appear, will be conjunct at 0 degrees Aquarius, right around Christmas solstice, right around the solstice time period. So there's something about Venus right now as it is activating, as it's activating the Mars in the United States chart. We have this virus, which is a hidden enemy, right? We're looking at it as an enemy, something to be combated, something to be fought. It's interesting that Mars here is holding this place at Orion's belt. So let's move on to thinking about Orion's belt, because now we're going to get off of this planet. Oof, I can feel the relief as soon as I say it, because it's so much change, right? We're adjusting to so much. We're adjusting to so many different unknowns. It's just tremendously unknown. We don't really have a scientific understanding of where we're headed with our biology. We have lots of ideas and there's certainly lots of theories, but we're still really in a pretty primitive state, I think, with science, because we don't even understand how electricity moves through a wire. We don't understand how our nervous system operates. These are all things that are connected, that are understandable once we move into higher dimensions, once we move into the ability to connect directly to the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth dimensions. And the eighth dimension is particularly connected to Orion. If you study the work of Barbara Hanclow, she really taps into Orion's belt and the galaxies that are in Orion's belt and in Orion, just below the belt. And as we tune into that area, we're tuning into the ability to accept light, to accept that there is this experience that we can move into greater light, less density, less feeling, less density in our bodies. So, back to Orion's belt. I'm going to share something different here. So what we're looking at right now is three volcanoes on the surface of Mars. So Orion's belt, if you're familiar with it, and sorry about this, but I know I have a picture of Orion in here. Here we go. Here's Orion. So here's Orion's constellation. Here's Orion's belt, these three stars. Mintaka, I think is the star on the, it's on one of the edges. I think it's this edge. And that is the sword. 21 degrees Gemini. The other ones are 20 degrees. We can see Betelgeuse is a very bright star that's up here at 28 degrees Gemini. And here's this area right here where all of these galaxies are. And the mythology of Orion is the hunter. So we're bringing in hunter prey. We're bringing in this element of duality with this constellation. And again, it's our projection. It's humanity's projection of where we align our power. So we're changing that projection and we're moving into greater peace, greater unity, greater inclusiveness. We're recognizing that our planet is waking up, our planet is changing. And this has been predicted by, gosh, all the great ancient sages, that as we, as our tilt changes, we move into this alignment where the winter solstice aligns with the galactic center, And if you want to understand that more, look up the work of John Major Jenkins. He wrote a really great book, Galactic Alignment, that really looks at the basis of that. So as we're aligning more and more at the galactic center through the tilt of our planet, we're moving into a different state of consciousness, and this can affect everything. The ability to manifest universal income is possible within this realm. The ability to support and provide for every living human being, supply food, comfort, home, existence. I mean, it's available now. We have the technology, we have all the abilities, we have enough ability to grow food. We have it here. We just have to change all the power structures. And that's, I think, an easier process than we imagine. And part of it has to do with stopping projecting that these other people have control over our lives. Whether you're liberal or conservative, I'm seeing it on multiple sides. You know, Bill Gates is not in charge. He's not in charge. Don't look at him or project that onto him. We have the room, as Nisargadatta said in the beginning of my talk. He came in and talked and said, you know, our little worlds, but our, all right, I'm just going to repeat it exactly. It is only when you fully accept your responsibility for the little world in which you live and watch the process of its creation, preservation, and destruction that you may be free from your imaginary bondage. Just like, do we actually need another sentence? Okay, so the constellation of Orion, it's holding the projection of the hunter. That there's hunter, there's prey. And as we know with hunters and preys, if we start feeling fear, we start to become prey. And it's the presence of fear that creates the sense of prey. So here's Orion's belt, and it has this particular affinity for Mars. Okay. So let's go back to Mars. And here are three volcanoes on Mars. They look just like the sword's belt, the stars on Orion. We're seeing this kind of mirrored. And then we come to the United States' chart, and we see that the United States has Mars at Orion's belt. And this is all tapping into a much bigger design, right? There's a bigger world, there's synchronicity out here. And the more we can tap into the synchronicity that's happening in our lives on a daily basis, the more we're tuning into these other dimensions. We're not just living in the third dimension, where if we're just in the third dimension, then yeah, we have people in charge. We have our boss who has control over whether we make money or not. But there's multiple dimensions. And as we come more and more into heightened states of awareness, we start to recognize that the power that we have to change our reality is instantaneous. We have the instantaneous ability to change the direction of our life. This is really high spiritual practices. So meditating right now, even if it's just for the shortest period of time, so that we can recognize that our consciousness is shifting. I keep visualizing as we come out of this to be very, very intentional about how you gather in groups. And I keep picturing kind of like me and a group of like four other friends just getting together outside within our 6 feet distances, but then start like really consciously presencing that, moving into groups of 11, where then we're connected to each other in a different kind of circle, and do these kind of rituals where we're gathering in a park or outside, like keeping things so that we're getting as much oxygen as we possibly can wherever we are. So we're connecting to the trees. And as we do this, we're changing the power structures, and we're changing how we're projecting power onto these leaders. Because as we saw, all these leaders that we're thinking are in charge, they're all going through this Venus stationing on their sun. That's who they are. That's their identity. That's how they perceive their identity of themselves. And so as Venus is like the world sending them love, and that love coming back to us, creating a circle. Oh, all right, I need to just like shake for a second. Can we just all take a moment, take a couple of breaths? All right, where did I lose you? I went in a bunch of different directions. Okay, I lost someone here. How does what is happening on Earth interact with Orion? Okay. There's something, something Alice Bailey talks about. So what would my talk be without bringing in Alice Bailey? Here's Alice Bailey, Esoteric Astrology. I love these hardcover books with really simple titles. It means it's a good book, right? Just kidding. So Alice Bailey talks about this thing. She's talking about astrology and the use of astrology, not for personality, not to determine your own personal karma. She says that astrology is useful to understand our direct connection with the universe. And she said that it is actually a blueprint for communication. And as we step into heightened states of communication, we get to recognize and follow the flow of, for lack of a better word, energy. Now we think about energy on this planet as we use energy as it flows through a wire, as it flows through our car engines. That's a manifestation of energy in the third dimension. When we're talking about energy in the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth dimensions, then we're talking about slightly different. All right, you got it. It's got to happen in the silence. There's no words for it, really. So when we're using astrology, we're using our projection from this planet out onto the stars. So it's not actually dependent on how far away the stars are, because Orion's belt, all right, I'm going to flip right through back to Orion's. Oh, yeah, the pyramids, too. They're cool, right? All right, here we go. All right, as we go to Orion's belt, we have these stars. Well, they're not equidistant apart. Some of them are much farther away. All these galaxies are here way farther away. They're outside of the Milky Way. These stars are all in the Milky Way. But our perception of them is what matters. Our consciousness of them. So the moon is a somewhat dead orbiting body that just keeps rotating around our planet. And it represents our perspective. It's an important thing in an astrology chart because of how much it has to do with how we process things. But it's just an indicator of the direction of our processing. So Orion's belt is one of these main places that there seems to be a presence of consciousness that our planet is directly connecting to. And I say this because if we look at, we look at the pyramids, they aligned with Orion's belt. And we look at the Cherokee had strong stories about Orion turtle. The Mayans had strong identity about Orion. All these like ancient cultures had strong connection to what Orion was about. The other thing about Orion is that it's an interesting, I just want to give you a chance to look at this. So here are the pyramids in Giza. So when we're talking about pyramid structures falling apart, we're actually talking about our connection to Orion and recognizing that underneath, we have to visualize that underneath the pyramids is an equal pyramid that is bringing in the octahedron, an eight-sided figure. Eight equilateral triangles. But when we come back to Orion's belt, one of the things about Orion's belt in terms of navigation and celestial navigation is that if you follow Orion's belt down, and this picture isn't big enough, but if you follow it down all the way down here, you get to the brightest star in the sky, and it's back here, probably just out of range of this picture, and that's called Sirius. And Sirius is a star that many cultures have identified as being the star that is our home star. It is the seed star for where humanity came from. And Orion's belt is the sword that kind of points to it. It's pointing out this is where we're coming from. And literally our solar system is moving away from the solar system of Sirius and moving towards the solar system of Vega. And Vega is around 14 degrees Capricorn, and we've had a bunch of alignments over the last couple of years about Vega. So we've been awakening with Saturn and Jupiter and Pluto have been awakening the understanding of Vega, which is about understanding a lot of these patterns, a lot of how we communicate celestially. Okay, too far out. I have to come back in for a second. This star is calling me. All right, so Sirius. As we present Sirius, we know that astronomers have shown that it's a binary star. The ancient Druze people knew that it was a binary star long before we had telescopes. They understood that it's an eclipsing star. They could see that there's two suns, and our current astronomers have detected that there's a planet that looks like it's roughly the size of Earth, and we could move there, but we're not going to move there because that would be moving back to someplace where we're leaving. We're moving towards Vega. So when they figure out what's around Vega, then that will be really interesting. All right, other questions? These are actual pictures. Barbara Hand Cloud talks about Orion. She says that her prediction is that the ancient Egyptians predicted that when Orion was in its highest position in the sky, that the world would change. And she thinks that that is happening right now due to the precession of the equinoxes. Okay, the other thing is the Orion constellation is very close to the Pleiades. So if you follow the Orion's belt up, you hit the Pleiades. If you follow it down, you hit Sirius. And it's very close to opposite the galactic center. Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you, Rachel, for the question about when to buy a home or start a business or what to actually do, use our free will, third ray to align with the shift from the sixth to the seventh ray. Okay. And what else about Vega? Okay, so with Vega, we can see patterns. We can see how things connect, and there's a heightened sense of synchronicity that comes in when we tune into Vega. It's Abhijit, the nakshatra Abhijit, which is the most sacred object, nakshatra or constellation in the Vedic. So when the stars are when a planet is aligned, the sun or some other planet, the moon is aligned with Abhijit, it's a sacred time, auspicious time to start anything. So there's something about tuning into a higher state of intelligence that combines love and intelligence that has a lot to do with Vega. I don't know that I can say more about that. All right, let's go back and share. Let's go back to the astrology charts. All right, so when is it a good time to do stuff? And somebody asked me about Stacey Abrams. You know, I didn't look at her chart. We'll see if I get to that at the end. All right, when's a good time to do stuff? Start a business, move. All right, let's talk about July. Because July has this other really auspicious thing going on for it. It has to do with Vedic astrology. Here's a lunar eclipse, July 4th here, July 5th, Greenwich Mean Time. And as we move into July, we have Jupiter in its own sign. It moves back out of Capricorn. We have Venus in its own sign, and we have Mercury in its own sign. And when all three of those planets in the Vedic, this is sidereal, are in their own sign, it creates the Saraswati Yoga. And Saraswati is about the arts, intelligence. This is a very auspicious nakshatra. So we want to look at July as being a really kind of special time. We move out of the eclipses. Eclipses are about destruction. So as we sit with our projection of, what did Nisargadatta say, creation, preservation, and creation, preservation, and destruction. Rama, Vishnu, Shiva. The eclipses are times of dismantling. So we want to align with the eclipses by dismantling whatever's not working for us. That is particularly end of May through the beginning of July. When we get to the July 4th eclipse, we start moving out of the eclipses and we start moving into a very auspicious time, particularly the final 2 weeks of July. And even August is pretty special. So those 2 months are very good if you're starting a new business, if you want to move, if you want to start things, we'll be able to connect. Now it's maybe hot at that time period because Mars is heating up, but it's not retrograde by that point in time. And there will be a sense of being able to ground. Now we have an opportunity before then also, which is as we move into May. And May has, and let's pull out this Venus retrograde, middle of May. As we move into May, Venus and Mercury, particularly towards the end of May, will move past the nodes. Actually, not Venus, Mercury will move past the nodes. And we'll move out of these Kala Sarpa times, these every other week time period where we're in these intense time periods. And we will we'll have a window in May, which can also be a good time to start things. But if you can wait till July, August, even the beginning of September, Mars retrograde is a fine time to start things as long as it's not, there's some conditions. Mars rules cars, it rules short travel, it rules, it rules violence or war, and it rules it's the warrior, it's anything that's instigated. It also rules surgery. So it's a little bit better. If you need emergency surgery, Mars retrograde's fine for it, but if you can put off surgeries until next year, that's going to be better. Especially if you can put it off like September 9th until November 13th, that's the window when we say that surgeries, elective surgeries, aren't really as auspicious. If it's not elective, then it's fine because you're aligning with the kind of intensity of Mars. That's kind of a simple answer to your question. Mercury will be retrograde in July, but don't let that stop you because it's in a good auspicious placement. So Yeah, July, August. Other questions? Any chance for resolving old relationship conflicts before Venus retro? Okay. Well, Venus retrograde can be good for resolving old conflicts itself. So, I mean, anytime we resolve an old conflict is good. But we can, especially if we're looking at parenting, if we're looking at relationships with people we co-parent with, those are karmic old, you know, they're lifetime relationships, probably prior life relationships. Those ones, I would say the Venus retrograde can be very auspicious for working through, particularly if your partner is born around June 10th. Finn's dad is a Gemini, so hopefully we will have some good conversations at that time period. I wouldn't stress it too much to try and work things out before the Venus retrograde, as if that's important. If it's big, long-term stuff that you've been trying to work out, I would take this time period right now to think about what you really want and get clear about what you really want. Then I would take the Venus retrograde to be in a spiritual practice time period, maybe an intentional time period with whoever you're working out stuff with. Maybe you're doing some kind of practice every day, whether it's like 5 minutes of thinking of each other, or 3 minutes of thinking of each other every day. So you're just kind of changing the nature of your relationship, doing it at the same time. And then when we come out of the Venus retrograde, then really renegotiating things. I think I would work with that if it was a more intense, difficult relationship. If it's a good relationship and you like the way it's going and you're happy with how things have gone during this time period, then I would use this pre-time period to be extra supportive, to re-engage with your partners, really maybe rebond. And even like right before this Venus retrograde, in the week before, really be intentional about going to the next level. Like, what's the next level in your relationship? Where can this relationship really go? Because, man, the sky's the limit. I mean, this is a cool transit. It did happen in 2012, but there wasn't an eclipse that triggered it then. And we weren't, you know, anywhere as close to what we're in right now. Okay, unfair workplace issues. Yeah. So as soon as you say that, I think about money. And I think about Venus as one of the rulers of money and how we work with money and how, you know, there's levels about money that have to do with our collective agreement, right? We believe that there's a Federal Reserve that's a private organization that has a lot to do with interest rates and what our exchanges goes. We believe that there's a stock market, which is bizarrely going up at this time period. We believe that there's a gross domestic product. There's numbers that we connect to, and we talk about these in terms of an economy. When we talk about economy, we're talking about Mercury. Mercury is the merchant. We live in a culture that values the merchant. In Vedic astrology, there's the kind of a hierarchy of consciousness with the planets, or a caste system. And there's the caste system where Saturn rules the servant caste, and then the next caste is Mercury, and the moon rule the merchant caste, and then the next level is the warrior caste, the Kshatriya caste, which is ruled by Mars and the sun, and then the highest caste is the Brahmin caste, ruled by Jupiter and Venus. And Jupiter and Venus are the planets that are the brightest in the sky. They bring in the greatest awareness, greatest awakening. And as we move into that big awakening with those two planets, we move into heightened states of consciousness, right? So Mercury's is kind of low But in our culture, in the United States in particular, Mercury is the highest caste. Our, you know, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett have these very strong Mercuries. They have these Bhadra Yogas in their charts. They have Bhadra Yogas when Mercury is so strong and angular. It's called the Mahapurusha Yoga. It's a great person with a great mind, but it's a mercurial mind. It's data, it's numbers, it's figuring out what something's worth. It's knowing what that thing is determined to be, how it's measured. So it's all about measurement. So as we shift from a mercurial-based society, which that's Mercury rules Gemini in its lower form, and we move into a society that is Brahman-based, Venus. We've already had enough war. We've had tons of that. So we get to bypass the Kshatriya caste. We move into a Venus-based society. This is about love, sharing, connecting to each other, caring about others. So I think how, you know, the details of how this is going to play itself out, I don't even want to project at this point in time. But being able to work out things within the workplace, your dynamics, I would think this would be a very profound time to be able to change the dynamics in your work environment. I think sitting with this moment where you're working with how you project power onto your boss. I mean, that's okay. I was going to talk about this cycle, and I've talked about this, it feels like millions of times, but we're in a cycle that began in the 1860s. This has to do with Pluto in declination as it goes up and below the equatorial plane. So not going into any more detail about that. It has to do with Pluto. It's a 247-year cycle. It began in the 1860s. But every time this cycle comes around, and it comes around every 248 years, 247 years, every time we have people becoming more empowered. And it has to do with, at one point in the time, everyone gives up their power to a leader, projects all this stuff onto, like we did with Hitler and Stalin and FDR. We thought they're in charge. We let them take over the whole world because we gave up our power. That happens every 250 years. We're moving into the course correction time between 2026 and 2031. This is a time period where we reclaim our power. So as we're in this moment, just before we move into a lot of reform next year, Saturn and Jupiter are conjunct at 0 degrees Aquarius. They're getting us into that reformation time. They're waking us up into the reformation next year. This moment, we get to really work with, are we projecting power onto our boss? Are we determining that they have control over our lives in some way? And okay, granted, it's easy for me to say because I don't have a technical boss. And a lot of us I know on the call don't have technical bosses. I know a lot of us are healers and workers and we're doing this work. But recognizing coming into a different relationship with that power structure. I think for those of us who don't, I mean, I remember having really intense boundary issues with bosses. Gosh, Carolyn McIntyre, who ran Radiance, she and I really worked out a lot of karma in the last 2 years I worked there, all about what it was to be a boss, what it was to be an employee, how much power did I have, how much power did she have, how much did we connect, and, you know, and that was like the deep work for me. I got to like step out and then move into my Saturn Dasha, and there were no more bosses, except for all of you. Now I have thousands of bosses. What's that song? We all got to serve somebody. That's Bob Dylan, right? You got to serve someone. So moving out of this, you have power, control over my life, into how can I serve you? What's my path of service? And if you can align with that, I've got to serve someone. And who are you serving? Instead of thinking that somebody else has control over, then you set yourself up to begin to align with what's actually coming into existence. And the benefit of that is just less of a shock when it actually happens. I mean, when all of this changes, it's going to be hugely shocking to a lot of people. And that kind of stress and that kind of shock is going to be emotionally traumatizing for a lot of people. So we get to do this work now this is a beautiful thing that's happening in a lot of ways for us to be able to deal with recognizing how much things can shift, how quickly they can change, and also recognizing and witnessing this experience of suffering that is vast. How much time do we have? Okay, 2 minutes. I'm about to change subject, but let me see. Yeah, we're looking at a change in leadership. Regardless of whoever wins the election, we're looking at a change in leadership. He's changing. If he still stays in president, we're all changing. You know, this Venus retrograde landing on all of their sons, Xi Jinping's, and there's going to be a tremendous amount of shifting that happens in terms of leadership. And that has to do with us changing our projection. So I want to bring in this other element. About the suffering that's happening in areas of the most oppressed. So the Navajo tribe is getting hit by this particularly strongly. When I look at the stats out of New York City, and I like to use Johns Hopkins site, I figure the universities are gonna be, have a little more vested interest in being accurate. Noticing that it's not Manhattan that's getting hit by it as nearly as strongly as it is Queens, where I was born. So is Donald Trump. So is Bernie, I think. We're all Queens people. Noticing, you know, it's Staten Island and the boroughs where it's people who have less access to prosperity. To oxygen, literally to oxygen, this whole connection to oxygen and this this virus that kind of feeds on low oxygenated states, like 5G states where 5G is taking out the oxygen, so it feeds on that. At least that's what I understand or believe. I believe to be true, I'll just say that. I don't know that to be true, but I believe that so much of this has to do with the oxygen, our ability to breathe, and stress means we don't take in as much oxygen, our breathing gets more shallow. So we actually become more susceptible to the virus as we breathe more shallow. And if we don't have access to trees or greater degrees of oxygen. And I think the suffering is real, and I think as cultures, as privileged people, those of us who are, shifting our perspective, our resources, so that we're supporting an environment where people get to move to, like in our town of Olympia, just supporting the homeless population here. There's different ways to do that. There's different levels of engagement. Supporting people and having a place to go, this element of refugeeness that has been part of societies for thousands of years. It's part of the whole Orion's Belt of refugee moving out of escaping someplace, escaping a place where there's war or there's famine. Creating environments where people can move to. So not being scared of people moving to Olympia or to whatever beautiful place that you live in, creating an environment that is a place for people to move to. Opening our homes, opening our towns, supporting our local businesses, and where are we putting our attention? Because this will directly value us personally. It's not about saving anyone. It's not about looking at them as victims. It's about recognizing that as we see that this is happening. We see that this level of suffering is happening. We recognize that our part is to create a place and an environment and a welcome sign for people to come and to be with us and to share what we have. That as we do that without feeling guilt or shame or, you know, any kind of personal oppression that we do to ourselves, but creating that environment where we're being supportive and we're opening up ourselves, that actually opens us up to a different state of wealth. Because the wealth that's coming in, it doesn't have to do with money in the bank. I mean, we're going to move into a recession at least next year. We're going to move into a time period where it feels like the money in our bank accounts goes down. But that doesn't mean that our prosperity goes down. That doesn't mean that we become less wealthy, because wealthy is having enough. Wealthy is having enough. Wealthy is having enough. And there is enough. There's enough to go around. And as we share, and you know, this is the whole Jesus with the loaves, right? There's enough. We believe in that there's enough with the fishes and the loaves, and he's feeding everyone, right? That whole story is embedded in our culture. There's enough, and we get to share it. And we get to recognize that we don't have to charge for every little thing that we do. We don't have to have these economic models of business as competition. As we do all of this among ourselves, we create a resonance that just expands and expands and expands. And that's my vision. That's what I'm holding. That's what I am a voice for. And I know many of you are voices for that also. And I am excited to see what so many of you are doing. I think that the cultural aspect of what's changing are the new arts that are coming out of this, what we're going to expand into as we move into increased connection with our masks and our gloves. Yesterday, I just found, I went through all this stuff from my grandmother, and I don't have a lot. I just have one tub of stuff from her. But I kept all the gloves that, because they fit my hands perfectly, and it's hard to find gloves that fit my little tiny hands. And so I just pulled out all these lovely gloves of hers, and I'm like, okay, so we have some new fashion senses, but they're all about, like, I care about you. And regardless of, you know, whether I'm worried about getting sick or not, there's an intense caring. I think this is part of people who have the canaries in the coal mines, the people that I know who are super sensitive. They're sensitive to sense. They're sensitive to sounds. And just recognizing that we're moving and coalescing into a place where we're deeply interconnected, and we recognize that other people's sensitivities matter. And that is the beauty of us moving out in this time. Oh, all right. I'm going to just take a moment and see if there's anything left that I need to share with you. All right, I went a lot of different places. We went to Orion's Belt. All right, let's come back from there and let's come back onto the planet. The Pleiades are a very nice antidote to Orion's Belt. So if you're ever out in the sky looking up, look at Orion's Belt, and then go up and look at the Pleiades and just tune in, because they are just beaming so much love down to us. Wow, that feels cool. So the Pleiades, the seven sisters, again, we've got this seven kind of sacredness to the number seven coming down, connecting to us. Yeah, and there, any kind of people, when I see people's charts aligned with the Pleiades, I look at, I just can't remember, yeah. United States, we don't have anything connected to the Pleiades. I'm just going to see if our constitutional chart has anything connected to the Pleiades. Solstice. No, Somebody does. Anybody, lots of people have got stuff connected to the Pleiades, and they're here to hold the heat. They're the healers. They're the people who know how to be in community. They're the people who know how to connect with others, to work together. And so they're a presence for us, and they have a direct connection to Venus, a sacred planet. And as Venus is helping us, our planet, awaken, we realize that we're microbes on this spinning ball with an iron core. Iron relates to Mars, and we're transforming our iron core into actual usable energy that's available for us to become increasingly aware and awake. And as we awaken, a lot of the questions that we have get answered instantaneously. Any answer we have can always be answered in the moment that the real question aligns. So as we step into the moment, we acknowledge here we are, back to this moment. We're presencing the fact that we are in a society, a world society. We are dealing with a problem that is all over the world. We are aware of its effect as it is affecting greater the people who have less, who are more oppressed. And we're holding that we are all transforming, all of us, out of victim prey. And we're in this moment where we're about to start to connect with each other. And we get to do that differently. And as we're in that transition, it's like coming off of a fast. We want to be really conscious of how we do it. We want to do it slowly. We want to be aware when we're doing it. So doing it in the most sacred way that you can to begin with. First people you want to gather together with are the people that are can hold your vision, can hold your sacredness. I encourage you to get together in small groups. You might even want to do this soon, staying, you know, in the presence of the transition. Most of us are living in cultures where it's getting nicer outside. We can be outside and just like holding the vision. Where do you want to go? Where's your life going? What has happened for you in this time period? And it'll be helpful to do before they open the bowling alleys. All right. Okay. Yeah, there's lots of different ways for us to be activists now. Mars, is a powerful time of activism. So when Mars goes retrograde in the fall, we get to really be activists also. And particularly as Mars is in Aries, that can be a very strong time period for direct activism and really the ability to shift things. Mars will be squaring Pluto during that time period. So it'll be activating our ability to really transcend out of these current power dynamics that are happening. Yeah. All right. I'm going to end the recording. Thank you. Peace, peace, peace.